again, and welcome to Memories and Music here on CIGM-FM. It's another Sunday afternoon. This is Ron Smith. We invite you to stay with us now for the next hour of great music and stories. Right now, here's Gary Peck.
For those of you who have a love for local history and a soft spot in your heart for ghost towns, today is the program that I think will be of particular appeal to you. We're going to be talking with an individual who lived in Mond, or is familiar with Mond, lived in Victoria Mines, also O'Donnell, and interestingly enough, those three areas, as I mentioned earlier, are ghost towns, although he indicates that there is no connection between his being there and the fact that they are ghost towns. Our guest today is Sandy Butler, worked for International Nickel for, I believe it was 37 years.
37 years.
Welcome to the program. We'll turn the program over now to our music host, and then we'll be back in a few minutes to talk with Sandy Butler. Our guest today is Sandy Butler. Sandy, would you begin the program by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was born in a little town between Ottawa and Montreal, and lived there from 1898 to 1900. Then my dad and mom decided to move north, and they said that they would like to live in Victoria Mines on account of it being a newly mining project, and they wanted to get some information about that. So we moved to Victoria Mines. And
what year would that be?
That was in 1900.
1900, and you were born in 1898?
I was born in 1898.
The community being? The
name of the community was Hammond.
Hammond.
A little farming community between Ottawa and Montreal in Russell County.
Presumably your dad farmed there, did he?
He farmed. He had a little farm there.
He was attracted to Northern Ontario because of what
because of
was
the,
coming out of the area in terms
yeah,
of
because of the information they got about the mining industries. And from there, we come to Victoria Mines in 1900, and I was 2 years old then, and when I was 4 years old, 5 years old, I started to school in Victoria Mines, and I went to school, finished my public school education, and from there I went to Sudbury and to high school for a while, and then I took a business course at the Sudbury Business College, and went to work for the Mond Nickel Company in Coniston for a while, and then I was transferred back up to Mond to work in the warehouse as a clerk.
Before we go any further, could you describe the location of Mond? I'm sure there are many of our listeners who may not
yes,
be familiar with it.
Yes.
And Victoria Mines, for example.
The Mond is it's a ghost town now, but it was a small community where the Victoria Mine is now. That is, the name of the mine is Victoria Mine at Mond Mine.
So it was just a little south of it, was it?
Or just a little bit north of the
just
Mond.
Just a little north of
the Mond.
The mine village. Was a little north of the village.
Yes. Yes. And I worked there for, I don't know just how long I worked there, about a year or so. Mm-hmm. And then I enlisted in the First World War. Mm-hmm. And I went overseas from there. And when I come back from overseas, I decided to explore Canada or investigate all
right.
of Canada. So I decided I was going to go out west and start to try out the first the pulpwood business and then the logging business, and I went right on through. I was right up as far as past Chapleau, and I got a I wrote to a friend of mine that worked at O'Donnell, and he sent me back a letter asking me if I'd come back to O'Donnell.
Mm-hmm.
That is O'Donnell.
Right.
And I come back, and I told him that I was only staying for a month, and then I was going to continue my trips out west and all over the place, getting a practical education on different things. And he said, okay. So I stayed there for the month, and the month extended into 8 years. And from there, I was transferred to Coppercliff in the crushing plant, and I worked there for the 28 years of the rest of my time with INCO.
So it was 28 years that you were
in Coppercliff.
In Coppercliff.
28 years in O'Donnell, and well, 8 years and 6 months, and mm-hmm. 8 years, 28 years and 6 months in Coppercliff.
Mm-hmm. So the bulk of your life has been in association with the mining industry.
With the mining business, yes, all the way through.
O'Donnell was a community northwest of Creighton. Would that be how you describe it?
No, it was not exactly northwest. It was more west of Creighton, mm-hmm. On the Vermilion River. It was a where they roasted their ore mm-hmm. on big beds of mm-hmm. wood, and they took all the sulfuric acid out of it, and the roasted ore was put back in cars and sent to Coppercliff for further roasting and mm-hmm. melting.
All right, I'm interested in pursuing this line of conversation a little further and talking about Victoria Mines,
yes.
Mond, and
yeah.
O'Donnell.
Yeah.
I think first we'll turn the program back to our music host. Welcome back to Memories of Music. Our guest today is Sandy Butler, employed by International Nickel for a number of years. And Sandy, you were raised really in the community of Victoria Mines. You indicated you moved there when you were about
yes.
2 years of age.
My dad and mom moved to Victoria Mines in 1900 when I was about 2 years old.
The community would only be about a year or so old at that
The
time.
Community at that time was about 6 years old.
Is that right?
Six, seven years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to school there in the public school. And I went to school there until for about 8 years. And I knew practically everybody in mm-hmm. town.
Was it a public school, or was there also a separate, or were they combined?
We started out with a public school
mm-hmm.
for about 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and then the last couple of years it was moved over to the separate school.
One of the schools is still standing, is it not?
No.
Down by the
yes.
where the train station
yes.
was? Which one is that, the separate?
There's a separate school is still standing there, but there's the couple of families living in it.
Right. That would probably be the only building still standing in the community?
No.
Close to it.
There is one other building that's still standing there. It was a building that the Mon Nickel Company wanted to try out to see if the slag would mix with cement and make a good building.
The monolithic building, is that
yes,
the one?
Yes, yes. And it was put up there way back in 1908, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
and it's still standing there.
It was as an experimental building.
Experimental.
And I suppose it attests to its durability, the fact that it's still standing. It must have been successful.
Yes, it was.
What was it like to grow up in Victoria Mines as a youngster?
Well, as a youngster, and I grew up in Victoria Mines, it was more or less of a challenge. For several reasons, there was a French town,
mm-hmm.
an English town, and we used to play baseball. Mm-hmm. All us kids used to play baseball, and we had teams, and they were very serious, you know, in playing the baseball, and. One time maybe the French town would win, and the next time the English town would win, and it kept that up for years. It all turned out for, you know...
Good honest rivalry.
Good honest rivalry, yeah.
Were the majority of the people English, French? Can you make a distinction?
There was a section of French, and there was a section of English, and there was another section of Italian, that kept their own section,
mm-hmm.
and then there was a section of what we used to call the Polish,
mm-hmm.
and there was no Finlanders, and there was no other than those three or four different,
mm-hmm.
and they all more or less were clannish. They stuck
right.
together.
Your community would be, in terms of entertainment, would be largely self-sufficient. You would make your own entertainment.
Always made our own entertainment, always.
Mm-hmm.
We towards the end there, the last couple of years, we built a skating rink out in the in a field there, and we had to do our own flooding and our own cleaning and snowing, clean the snow off, and everything. It was all out in the open, and we used to play hockey and have a good time on the skating rink.
What were the churches in the community?
The churches, the names, you mean?
Yes, or the denominations.
The denomination was, there was one RC, Roman Catholic, there was one Anglican, and there was one Presbyterian. And I think that was the end of it. I think there was only the three.
The bell for the Roman Catholic Church, the Mariah, I believe it's called?
The Mariah,
yes. Yes, it's just
over
across the road from where we are right
road,
now.
Right now,
you were
yeah.
involved in the moving of that over there. You had some
yes,
involvement.
Yes, we had to, I had to do with the finding of the bell after it was lost for several years. Mm-hmm. And we set it up over in front of the church here in Whitefish. Mm-hmm. And when that bell was in place in the church in Victoria Mines, I used to have to do the ringing mm-hmm. of the bell for the different masses, and we each had our turn. The altar boys each had their turn,
right.
And this particular occasion, I had to take a Sunday afternoon off. It was my turn to ring the bell, and there was a christening come. And the party that was being christened was a girl by the name of Bernadette Hamilton. And I thought nothing of it at the time. I just rang the bell. Mm-hmm. And when that was over, I took off with the rest of the gang.
Right. How old would you have been at the time?
I was about between 7 and 8.
So you had other things to do in the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah, we had baseball in
sure.
the afternoon. So that was good for that part of it. But then, we take the rest of it?
Mm-hmm.
When we closed the church and bell was lost for several years, fell off the church and lost in different places. And when I found the bell and we set it up here at the church here, we found out that it was the bell that I had been ringing when I was altar boy.
Mm-hmm.
And
the bell has a special meaning to you, doesn't it?
In this case, the bell has a special meaning because it was the girl that was christened on the afternoon that I had to do the ringing turned out to be my wife.
That's a fascinating story. And when you get up in the morning, you can look out the window and you can see the bell as a reminder every
yeah,
day.
Every day.
That's very, very interesting. In the community, it was the Roman Catholic Church that was it torn down, I think, in the latter 50s?
Yes, it was torn down quite late, in the 50s or 60s, I think it was. Somewhere in there, between mm-hmm. the 50s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It was torn down, and a fella took it away. He took all the lumber away.
Right. What were some of the businesses in Victoria Mines?
There was three grocery stores. There was Oliver's, McDougall's, and Harry Pelchery. And they all had dry goods and groceries and a variety store.
What one would find in a general store.
In a general store. Then we had a butcher shop. It was well run. It was we killed all our own beef there,
mm-hmm.
and the pork and stuff, and it was all done
mm-hmm. properly.
Properly.
Who operated that store? Can you recall?
The butcher shop was run by Henry Noggle.
Henry Noggle.
He was the original
mm-hmm.
of that.
Any other businesses?
And there was a barber. Single barber, and he was the only one in town.
He had a separate shop, or he operated on his house, or a little shop?
No, he operated on a little shop.
What did it cost for a haircut and a shave?
I paid 15 cents for a haircut, and I didn't have to have a shave.
No. When was this, when you were paying 15 cents?
This was back in 1905 and mm-hmm. 6.
You also had a bake shop, you mentioned earlier.
Yes, we did have a bake shop there. It was run by an Italian up in an Italian town, and he had his own system of baking his bread. He used to make ovens out of rock, and he put the wood in the oven and got it good and hot. Then he cleared the wood out of the ovens, and then he put the bread in ready to be cooked, and it cooked in the ovens, and then it was taken out of there, and it was sold to the there were several communities that he delivered bread to. There was Crane Hill, there was Mond, Whitefish, Worthington, and Victoria Mines.
His name was
Caberlin, a fellow name of Guy Caberlin. Yeah.
And that would be the extent of the businesses, as you recall.
Yes, as far as I can remember.
Mm-hmm. What would be the size of Victoria Mines?
Well, the size is
vary. I know.
It was a population. It had a permanent population of about 300 families.
When was this now?
That would be back between 1907 and 1910.
Approximately 300.
But then there was these two big boarding houses there that took care of the floating population, men that had come and worked for a certain length of time and then get a little stake and they take off.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the community referred to as Victoria Mine and Victoria Mines. Does it have the S on the mine? Is that how you remember it, as Victoria Mines?
No.
No.
It was Victoria Mine where the smelter was.
Right. And the community?
The community was Victoria Mines. Victoria Mines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, there has been photographs. I've seen some confusion. I'm glad to get that clarified. I think what we'll do now is we'll turn the program back to our music host. When we return, I'd like you to share some reminiscences about the community and possibly provide us with some of the names of the people who lived in Victoria Mines.
Right.
Our guest today is Sandy Butler, who hailed from Victoria Mines, O'Donnell, Mond, and currently resides in Whitefish. Sandy, could you provide us with some information about the names of the people who lived in Victoria Mines? You indicated that there were about 300 people there at one time.
Yes. The permanent residents in Victoria Mines was Frank Sims, Tom Powers, Johnny Griggs, there was Dan Cullen, and there was Johnson's, and there was Blake's, and there was Jolicoeur's, and there was a LaFrance, and that's a few of them.
Sure. And some of the names I recognize as names from this area. Cullens, for example, related to the Cullens who went into politics, who became mayor?
No, they were never in politics. Cullens were never in politics. Mm-hmm. There was one name I mentioned there. It was Blake's.
Right.
When Toe Blake was born, that is Toe Blake of the Canadians,
right.
I was sitting on the back steps of his house when he was born. Mm-hmm. And it was his two brothers and me were sitting on the back steps playing marbles.
So he was born in Victoria Mines.
In Victoria Mines.
Ultimately moved to the community of Coniston.
To Coniston,
right.
Yes.
Victoria Mines, when we walk through that area today, as we indicated earlier, there are really only one or two homes that are still standing and maybe a few foundations.
Yes.
What happened to the community?
Well, when they built a new smelter in Coniston, the Mond Nickel Company built a new smelter in Coniston for better service as far as bringing in the ores is concerned, then they closed up Victoria Mines as a smelter and the further use as far as the company was concerned. So the company houses that were there, my dad had a contract to cut them in sections and to move them up to Worthington for to be set up there as company houses again. And the rest of the houses, everybody took their own house and moved it to wherever they needed them.
Right. What percentage would have been company homes?
Oh, there would be about a small amount. There'd be about, I'd say...
Less than 50?
No, there'd be around pretty close to 50 homes, company houses.
Approximately half of the homes, would they be company homes?
No, I see.
It'd be a small... About a quarter.
About a quarter of the homes are company homes.
And the company made allowances for those to be moved?
Yes, my dad had a contract with the company.
Would the company pay for their moving?
Yes,
moving of those
the company
homes?
Paid for the moving, right. And they gave them a contract on it.
How were they moved?
They were moved, they were cut in sections, like maybe one house would be cut in about six sections, and we put them on top of a big wagon, flat wagon, and in those days there was no such a thing as cars, it was all done with wagons and horses.
Team of horses or
yeah,
things.
And there was no danger of them when we moved it up to Worthington, the road was clear all the way through, no trouble.
Some of them were moved to Worthington?
To Worthington.
Also Coniston?
No. Yes. No, there was none moved to Coniston. There was all moved from the homes that the company owned were moved to Worthington.
Some of the private homes went to Coniston.
Yes. And then the rest of the homes were owned by the people, and they took them and moved them wherever they had to go, wherever they wanted them to go.
Would they have cut them in sections as well?
No. No. They just tore them all down.
Oh, tore them down and
tore them right down, boards and nails and everything.
And reassembled them.
Rebuilt wherever they were going.
Right. My understanding is, talking with people in Coniston, that some of the homes there came from Victoria Mines, so they must have moved them piecemeal and then reassembled them.
In Coniston, they... I can't see where... There was about four houses, I think, that the company moved into Coniston.
Oh, it'd be just a handful, I know.
Just a few. And they were moved piece by piece.
Sure. Must have created quite a hardship for the people in the community at that time.
Well,
was it a thriving community in many ways?
Yes, it was quite a session, because they had to pack up and find a place and to rebuild, and it took quite a bit of energy and pushability.
Many of the people, in all likelihood, just moved out of the area, I suppose.
A lot of them just left their houses there, let them go to waste, and they moved out. Took their furniture and moved out.
Have any reminiscences about Victoria Mines? Any interesting anecdotes about personalities in the community that you might want to share with us at this time?
Well,
I know you were fairly young when you were there.
Yes, there's only the one there. It was that I really come off is that Toe Blake. He was born in Victoria Mines, and his two brothers and I were sitting on the back steps of his house and playing marbles when he was born.
His dad worked then.
His dad worked for the company, Monnickel Company, and the smelter.
It's quite interesting. You mentioned that from there, I believe you went to the community of Mond itself.
Well,
ended up there anyhow.
I ended up there at Mond to work in the warehouse as a clerk, and I wasn't too fussy about inside work. I asked them if I could go and work in the mine. And he gave me permission to work down below. And when I was there for a while, and the First World War was on, and I decided to enlist from there. And I went overseas.
From after they closed the community of Victoria Mines, I assume, did your parents move to Coniston?
No, when they closed Victoria Mines, my parents moved to Sudbury.
To Sudbury.
We tore the house down in Victoria Mines, board for board, and built it up on Kathleen Street.
And you would have moved there with them?
No, I moved there with them.
Being a teenager?
Yes.
You lived there for?
Oh, we lived there for 6-7 years. And everything was switched around, changed around. My brothers and sisters all grew up and moved away.
So your house, is it still standing in Sudbury, the one that was moved?
No, not the one that we built there on Kathleen Street. It was torn down to make way for a parking lot.
Nice. That happens to so many buildings, doesn't it? Your first job in the mines, was that with the Mon Nickel Company?
With the Mon Nickel Company.
At Victoria Mines?
At Mond.
In the community of Mond?
At the Victoria Mine in the community of Mond. Right.
All right. I think we'll turn the program back to our music host. When we return, I'd like to talk a bit about the community of Mond and your initial work in the mining company.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Memories of Music. Our guest is Sandy Butler. And Sandy, you've worked at what some of us know as Victoria Mine, but which you remember as Mond
Mine. As the Mond Mine, yes.
And that was just north of the community of Mond.
The mine itself was just north of the community of Mond Village.
Village, all right.
Yeah.
What period of time were you there? What would be the year?
The year was 1915, and it was during the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked there for about a year, I decided that I was going to enlist from there and go overseas, which I did. And the town itself, there was a Finn Hall, and there was a carpenter shop, and there was a blacksmith shop, and there was a couple of stores. General stores. Mm-hmm. And there was a few sport places. There was tennis courts.
Tennis courts.
Yes, and there was horseshoes.
Popular sport.
Quite
at
a popular sport in those days.
The Finn Hall would have been located on the east side of the road?
The Finn Hall was located on the east side of the road going in there.
Yes, going north.
On top of a fairly good-sized hill. Mm-hmm. And it was a big building, and it was all kinds of, the Finns were good at athletics and stuff
like
that.
Yes, I was about to say, if it was a typical Finn Hall, they would have an athletic program.
Oh, boy, they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How many people would we be talking about when we're discussing the village?
The Mond itself, there was about, I'd say, 40 or 50 families, we'll say, roughly. And that'd be a matter of about maybe 100 people.
About a third the size of Victoria Mines. Victoria Mines, part of it was a company community. Some of the homes were owned by the company, you indicated.
In Victoria Mines,
yes. In Mond, private homes?
No, they were all private homes. Mm-hmm. The company had nothing to do with the homes at all.
So the mine, the Mond Nickel Company had the mine there, and for convenience sake, people moved into that area and erected a
home.
To
be close to the mining, close to the job, and they built their own homes.
Today when I drive up there, all that I see is an open area on both sides, a few foundations, a gravel pit far to the west.
Yeah, that's all there's left of it. That's nothing, absolutely nothing.
What happened to the homes? What happened to the village?
The village, well, I couldn't say exactly, but I imagine that they were all taken away or left to rot.
The mine was shut down?
The mine was shut down, and they claimed that it was out of ore.
Right.
And they used Garrison for their supplies for Coniston.
I see. Be much handier for them, wouldn't it?
Yes, it was quite a bit handier.
Considerable. What period of time would we be discussing when we recount the decline of the community of Mond? Approximately when did it begin to decline as a village?
The village declined when I was overseas.
During
World War One. After I went overseas, they decided on all this here.
I see. So when we're talking about the community of Mond during its heyday, so to speak, we're talking about that brief period prior to World War One.
Prior to World War One, yes.
The community of Mond started, did it start later than the community of Victoria Mines, or about the same
time? About the same time.
Mm-hmm.
See, when they started up Mond, when they decided to use Mond as a supplier of ore for the Victoria Mine smelter.
Yes.
They decided to put a bucket line through from Mond.
Down to the smelter.
Down, right down through over the hills to the smelter. And these buckets, they'd fill them up with the ore, and they'd bring them out halfway to Victoria Mines and dump them off, and they'd be roasted in the roast yards and then be refilled and carried on back right through to Victoria Mines as roasted ore and dumped into the smelter to be refined.
The smelter was located near the community of Victoria Mines.
At the community of Victoria Mines. The village was practically all around the smelter.
Is that right?
Yeah.
When you talk of this, would be an overhead tramway that would bring the buckets down?
Yes, yes. An overhead...
What would propel the buckets? Were there horses used?
I know there were at Worthington
at one time in the last century.
No, what was used to propel, they had an electric
generating system or motor, yes.
Motors for to keep the bucket line going. There was two cables. There was an inch and a half cable for the bucket to sit on top on wheels.
Right.
Then halfway down on the bucket, there was another cable, a 5/8 cable, that was clamped onto the cable. The bucket was clamped onto the cable,
right.
And then it was propelled from there into the smelter on that cable. Mm-hmm. The cable turned continuously.
Your first job in the mining area was at Mond?
Yes, it was in Mond.
What did you do, and how much would you earn at that time?
Well, I started in clerk in the warehouse, and I was getting, I think it was $32 a month or something, and then I went to work in the mine, and I was getting 25 cents an hour.
25 cents an hour.
Yeah.
You'd be underground.
Underground, yes.
Hard work.
Oh, really hard work. Oh, boy. In those days, you earned your pennies.
Mm-hmm. Really appreciated the dollar.
That's
or
for
the
sure.
25 cents.
The 25 cents was worth it.
Right. And when you were sick, you weren't being paid at that time.
No.
You had to be there working.
Yeah.
Can you recall some of the families who lived in the community of Mond?
Yes, I think I can recollect a few of them. Mm-hmm. There was a family name of Edgecombe. There was a family name of Walker, Bayless, Webster's, Mumford's, and Elliot's. And, there was several foreign names I didn't...
Okay, that gives us an idea.
Yeah.
The majority of the people, were they French, English, other nationalities, or was there quite a mixture in that community?
No, there was just the two. There was just the English and the Finns.
English and the Finns.
Yeah, there was just the two, English and Finns. Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, from there, you ended up in O'Donnell for a number of years.
And
I think what we'll do is we'll break the program now, turn back to our music host. When we return, you can provide us with some tales about the community of O'Donnell.
Okay.
Welcome back to Memories of Music with our guest, Sandy Butler. Sandy, you've been sharing with us some interesting recollections about Mond, the community of Mond, community of Victoria Mines. I also understand that your travels took you to the community of O'Donnell, the village of O'Donnell.
The village of O'Donnell, yeah.
Do you mind talking about that for a while?
Yeah, well...
When did you go to O'Donnell, for example?
I went to O'Donnell in 1922. I was on my way out west, and I got a letter from a school chum of mine that was working in O'Donnell, and he asked me if I'd come back and for a while and give him a hand in O'Donnell. They were having trouble with the different things, and they asked me to go and give him a hand out. So I told him when I come back to O'Donnell, I told him, now look, I said, I'm only staying for a month, and I'm going to continue my experiences on the way west, I said, and I'll only see a month.
You wanted to see the country after the
war. I wanted to see the country, and I wanted to get an idea of all the different workings that were going on, like pulpwood and logging and anything at all that was.
Right.
So when I got there, back to O'Donnell, and I stayed there for the month, like I told them. And after the month was up, the month ended up another year, and it went on for 8 years that I stayed in O'Donnell. And after 8 years, the place closed down again, and they took all the houses away, moved some of the houses to Coppercliff and put them up there in sections. Mm-hmm. And some of the houses were sold, and they took more of the lumber away.
Why was the community closed?
Well, they had a new process for roasting the ore
right
in the smelter in Coppercliff, and they didn't need the open-air process like O'Donnell was.
More economically feasible and less
more,
damage
yes,
to the environment?
It was economically feasible to do it the other way. Mm-hmm. Anyhow.
Tell us about O'Donnell, the community itself. How many homes would there have been in the community?
There was about, I'd say there would be about maybe 16 or 17 homes. Mm-hmm. But there was only about 14 families. There were two or three homes that were empty. Never did have anybody living in them.
They were company homes?
They were company, all company homes. Mm-hmm. Everything belonged to the company.
It for some people, the community would appear to be very isolated. It wasn't that accessible.
It wasn't really accessible, no. Other than the passenger train that used to run on the Algoma Eastern Railway in the morning and back at night.
What time would you catch that? Coming out of Coppercliff?
Coming out of Sudbury. Sudbury, get that about 8 o'clock in the morning and go through O'Donnell about 8:30, quarter to 9.
And then you could catch it in the evening?
Catch it in the evening, you could go back to Sudbury.
What would the fare be at that time?
It was 55 cents from O'Donnell to Coppercliff.
One way?
To Sudbury, one way.
55 cents. Would the train be full? Passengers?
Fairly good load. It carried quite a few passengers.
Mm-hmm. Was the train on time? Did it usually meet its schedule?
About once a month it was on
time. Once a month. Very little has changed. Other than that, it provided a needed service, I suspect.
Yes. Oh, yes. It was serviceable, all right, for anybody that had lots of time.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of the people who lived in O'Donnell?
Well, the superintendent name was Bob Richardson. Mm-hmm. The mechanical foreman was Bert Bray. And the yard foreman was Percy Coons. And then there was, I worked the ore distributor. Mm-hmm. And then there was a fellow named Lalonde. He was, he worked there. Jack Cullen, Mapes's, George Mapes. And then there was George Denami, Dunsmore. And Hildebrandt, Packelaw. That's mm-hmm. pretty well takes care
yes,
of them all.
Yes, pretty well does. So you came out in 1930 not necessarily because you wanted to, but because they closed the community.
Because they closed the community.
And all the homes were uprooted.
And all the homes went up for grabs.
Right. When you were living there, you were married.
I got married in O'Donnell.
Mm-hmm. From O'Donnell, did you go to Coppercliff?
Yeah, I moved to Coppercliff in 1930 and started to work in the crushing plant.
Mm-hmm. What was your job at O'Donnell? You were involved with machinery, eh?
I had to do with the ore distributor. Mm-hmm. We used to call it the ore bridge.
Right.
Because it looked like a big bridge.
Yes.
But the ore distributor, I was operating that for 8 years, mm-hmm. putting the green ore on top of the wood piles, ready to be roasted. And then after it was roasted, then there was what they call the shovels. They come and picked it up and put it back in the cars.
Was everything largely mechanical in that roaster?
It was pretty well all mechanical. I was about the only operator in the whole place. Everybody else was mechanical. Mm-hmm. I was operator on account of the machine I was running.
Mm-hmm. You were familiar with the machine?
Yes.
You recall any, do you have any vivid recollections about O'Donnell? What you liked about it, what you didn't like about it as a community?
Well, I liked O'Donnell for the fact that everybody in O'Donnell was friendly with each other as far as family life was concerned.
Right.
And we had our own little dance hall, and we had a skating rink, and we had different little things to put in the time, and snowshoeing and fishing and whatnot.
Again, you had to assume responsibility for your own activities. No one else.
Oh, yes. It was all our own responsibility for all our activities.
Fairly close-knit community?
Yes, really close-knit community. Mm-hmm. And everybody that's moved away from there that I've spoken to afterwards all said they wish they were back in O'Donnell again.
Very positive about it.
Oh, yes. Really.
Would that be the same with Victoria Mines and Mond, the people you've talked to?
Not so much Victoria Mines, but Mond. Mond was close-knit, too.
Mm-hmm. But some people probably, when they reflect, looking back a number of years, probably remember, have many happy associations with those communities.
With those communities, yes.
Many small communities.
You take like the Victoria Mines, the different things there. There's the skating rinks and the different things that we did to put in the time was made it all close-knit.
Our guest today has been Sandy Butler, and Sandy has been talking about a number of, as we began the program, we referred to them as ghost towns. Community of Mond, community of O'Donnell, and the community of Victoria Mines. Sandy, I think we've learned quite a bit about the communities, although I'd also like to hear a little more from you as to your involvement with the mining industry. You worked many, many years for Mond, and then ultimately, of course, Inco Metals.
Then when I finished with the Mond, I spent the biggest part of my life from then on with Inco and working in O'Donnell, mm-hmm. and working in Coppercliff, and I had a family of six, and they were all went to school in Coppercliff, and they all drifted out from there.
Mm-hmm. What did you do in Coppercliff? What was your line of work?
My line of work, I was a millwright as far as the repair work was concerned. Had to do with working up the crushing plant, repairing crushers and rolls and screens and things like that right in the crushing plant itself.
Mm-hmm. Did you work underground in Coppercliff?
No, there was no underground work at all.
So you were, when you were at Mond?
Yes.
Mine, you were underground.
Underground, for the experience.
Right. That was the extent of your work underground?
Yeah, just the experience.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, I also grew up in small communities, and I've always felt that there were some advantages to that. Might you comment on that? Do you feel that you probably have some happy memories and can recall
like,
some of the
You take, like, as far as small communities are concerned, you're more close-knit. In respect to families, more so than the floating population. Mm-hmm. The families would all get together, like taking O'Donnell, we'd all get together there and we'd go out for a snowshoe party, mm-hmm. or we'd go to a skating party, mm-hmm. and all the families would all get together and maybe if the skating rink wasn't ready, we'd all get a shovel and shovel off the rink, and a whole community affair.
Mm-hmm. The same would occur with the children, I suppose, in the communities. They would be closely knit.
The children would all be, they would all play in hockey together on the rink, or they'd be all out on the sliding on the hill or something. All the whole community kids all together, mm-hmm. all stick together.
That would be the same in Victoria Mines and Mond.
Yes,
well.
Yes.
You must still encounter people from those communities.
I have met mm-hmm. some of them. The ones that from Victoria Mines, most of them moved to Coniston.
Right.
And they started work there. Their dad started work there. And then us younger ones, we still know each other as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Having grown up in a small community, you would remember each other.
Yes,
have a lot to talk about.
So much better.
All right. Thank you very much, Sandy Butler, for bringing to light, I feel, very interesting information about these early communities.
Yeah.
I don't think there are too many people who are in a position to recall the early history
to
of those
reminisce
communities.
Like that.
And, And I've always felt you have a fine memory, and I'm fortunate that we were able to capture some of your recollections on tape. Thank you very much.
Quite welcome.
That's our program of Memories and Music for this Sunday afternoon for Inco Metals Company. This is Ron Smith inviting you to join us again next Sunday at the same time, 1 o'clock, as CIGM-FM brings you Memories and Music.